I have no idea how to tell this story. I don't even know how to start it. This is the story of my senior year of high school and how it destroyed my life.
Your father and I want to talk to you about something sad. Rachel Kushner has been diagnosed with leukemia.
That sucks.
It sucks.
It sucks quite a bit.
You might be someone who could make Rachel feel better.
I don't need your stupid pity.
I'm not here because I pity you. I'm actually here because my mom is making me.
It's actually worse.
From Milwaukee, welcome to The Phi Effect, where any film is open for discussion. I'm Matthew Baltz.
Jason Callen.
Jacob Meridian.
Today we are reviewing Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, directed by Alfonso Gomez-Rejon.
Who is this little friend?
Earl's just my coworker.
I've known him since kindergarten.
What you got, cat? Wanna fight? Didn't think so, punk-ass cat.
So you and Greg are coworkers?
Nah, we friends. Dude's terrified of calling somebody his friend. Lou's got issues.
The IMDb summary for Me and Earl and the Dying Girl is high schooler Greg, who spends most of his time making parodies of classic movies with his coworker Earl, finds his outlook forever altered after befriending a classmate who has just been diagnosed with cancer. This movie was first seen at the Sundance Film Festival, am I correct?
Sundance 2015.
And it got a lot of buzz from that outlet, and it, from there...
It actually says it won the U.S. Grand Jury Prize Dramatic and the Audience Award for U.S. Drama at the festival, which are like two of the festival's highest prizes.
And then you said it got picked up by Fox Searchlight.
For $12 million.
And here we are, watching it in the limited release. I can't help but think back to a few other movies that have gotten the same praise from Sundance. I'm thinking of The Spectacular Now. I'm thinking of Fruitvale Station. Personally, I had a very underwhelming reaction to this movie, just as I did with those other movies. Even though the narration kind of describes this movie as not your typical coming-of-age romance story, which it seems to be, I feel like I've seen this film countless times before. It had a lot of genuine moments and scenes, but it's another film which I think cannot really establish its own tone. It kind of jumps between various forms of comedy and drama, and I had a hard time just enjoying it.
So if this was a touching romantic story, our eyes would meet and suddenly we would be furiously making out with the fire of a thousand suns. But this isn't a touching romantic story.
Jacob, what do you have to say about this movie?
Oh, what do I have to say? I went into it not really knowing much. I'd only seen the trailer, and it's like, it looked kind of like what we've talked about, like that Sundance film. It just looks like it's hitting all the notes and stuff. But I'm like, okay, you know, I'll try to look past this. Maybe there's something good here. But I could not get into the film because right away it starts out with that kind of, it's like, not even, it doesn't even come smoothly. It's like a forced kind of quirkiness. Like, I use quirky with a little trademark symbol after it. Because it's like this feel that a lot of first-time filmmakers or younger filmmakers or people who are trying to be hip try to go for. And it's kind of like, it doesn't feel natural. It feels like it's trying too hard to be alternative and goofy and unique. And right away when they started with the little animations, which I did think were kind of cute, it felt like it was, I was just like, God, this is going for it. It's just trying too hard. And then I did not like the film overall because I could not get past the protagonist. And I know this isn't like a requirement. We've talked about this before where you don't have to like a character. But the fact that this guy, at least for me, was so insufferable, and that he went through hardly any character change by the end of the film, I did not think it was worth sitting through over an hour and a half of his, I'm not even going to use the word shenanigans, because that's too fun for this kind of stuff that we had to deal with, through his supposed suffering or whatever. I did not think it was worth it by the end just to have this slight little bit of dynamic character change. It was just, this movie made me angry. Very angry.
Yeah, I'm with Jacob on this one. This movie infuriated me. I
don't even really know where to begin with how much I dislike this film. We could start with its desperate narrative attempts to tell you that the film is not cliched. The film is different than all these other stories. When in reality, the film is so dependent on the cliches of these types of teenage coming-of-age type BS movies that it's not even funny. It doesn't exist without these cliches. And then it robs you of, like, it robs you of the narrator at the end. It becomes an unreliable narrator because he's been lying to you the whole time. I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg. I was insulted and, like, felt bad as a movie lover. The way they fetishize film in this movie was very uncomfortable, and it just made me feel bad about being a film lover. And I don't really think that's what you want to do in your movie. You know, people have been complaining about Jurassic Park and the product placement. There's more product placement in this movie than in one scene of this movie than in any bit of Jurassic World. I mean, it is a big old gibber to the Criterion Collection. I mean, did they pay these guys? I mean, did they pay to make this film? Does Werner Herzog know that this film exists? Like, how did they get the okay? Like, because this seems to me like something that Werner Herzog would kill people over, like a movie this horrible and this cliched and this boring. Like, does he know that his name and the image and his, you know, his films are being broadcast in this movie? Like, I mean, again, like, there's so much more to hate about this movie.
That's an interesting thing, because, like, I kind of, when you said unreliable narrator, that's interesting, because I didn't really see it in that way. I mean, I won't say what the thing was that he was unreliable about yet, not to spoil the movie this early into the review. But, yeah, that was just, like, a constant thought my whole time when watching the movie. It's like, is he kind of lying about this, or is it, you know, kind of going to go the
fact that he emphasizes
route?
It made me doubt all
right.
of his
but
statements.
Yeah, right. By the third time he says it, you're like, oh, okay, she's dead.
But the way, well, there we go. We spoiled it already.
Did I spoil the movie? Trust me. You
not
don't
even
want to see this movie anyway.
We made it about 7 minutes, or 8 minutes.
Yeah, because it was at the end, and I guess since we've spoiled the film now, and it doesn't matter, we can talk about it. When she dies and, you know, he's explaining she went into a coma and never woke up and stuff like that and then died. And then he didn't even, like, he just simply wrote off that he was telling us the exact opposite. He, not even, like, I was trying to shield you from anything. It's just like, oh, I didn't think it. He didn't even have an explanation. He just wrote it off.
No, he did have an. He was like, I really thought she would get better. But that doesn't make any sense because you're telling this as a memoir, so it's not. I mean, she's already dead when he starts the story. That's
right.
That's the way.
God, damn.
It, you know, that's the impression that you get. That, like, the story is over. He's telling the story from the beginning. You know the ending. You know, like, it's just such BS.
Is it a memoir or is it his?
Yeah, because he starts out
college.
Well,
like a letter that he's sending to college.
It's like a mini memoir.
Does it matter? She's already dead. Like, whatever you want to call it. It's like it's an essay, an entry essay, or it's his horrible screenplay for the movie that we just watched.
Well, I want to verify because the entire narration is what he's writing down, and if this is all what he's like sending into a college,
pretty strange. But it's strange circumstances.
I mean, that's how
he blew off his last semester and.
His last year.
His last year, whatever.
You mentioned how this film fetishizes other films in film history and essential films.
The Criterion Collection, essentially.
I got the impression it's almost like a film fanatic just decided to make a movie wherein he just takes what he sees on television.
Yeah, look at all the cool things I watch.
Sticks it into his own movie, kind of
right.
Hodgepodge.
Right. Like, I'd rather see a movie made by a person who's watched all those films and actually, like, incorporated the ideas of originality and, like, done things not just show off and, like, show us pictures of the covers, you know, so that we know that you watched it, actually, like, incorporate Werner Herzog's idea of, like, seeking ecstatic truth or, you know, some other philosophy that some other better filmmaker might have that you're stealing from, like...
I guess we shouldn't really, like, cite other reviews, but, like, what we're talking about, this was a review in the AV Club.
Shoot.
Where he was pretty much saying, you know, the same thing as you where there's like send-ups to all these films, but he says, though fitfully funny, they can't mask the movie's fundamental emptiness. And he also says there's so many references to Werner Herzog that he could qualify for fourth billing.
Could you introduce the article?
This is just the review from Earl and the Dying Girl at the AV Club, written by Ignacy Vishnevetsky. I'm probably murdering his name there.
No, that's pretty good, actually. Yeah, he was he's the guy from
Roger Ebert's.
Yeah, he took over with he and Christy Lemire. I like him a lot, actually. I would disagree with him on the fitfully funny part. I found all those little parodies agonizing and, again, more of an insult to the original movie than any kind of, like homage or any kind of, like...
Because, yeah, I mean, maybe, like, part of me hates this film because maybe it sees a little bit of me in that character because, like, I did... Like, when I was in high school, it's like, I thought it would be cool to be, like, the loner, but I never, like, actively tried to be the loner, and I was like the guy, like I was the go-to guy amongst not just my friends but a lot of people who was like a film geek, but I didn't really like show that off. It was just like, yeah, I just watch a lot of movies, and no, I don't watch a lot of mainstream movies. I'm watching these weird, you know, like Criterion Collection titles every now and then, but I never tried to like make a big deal out of it and say, like, kind of like this kid is, where he's just like, oh, you know, we're so cool. We just sit in the office watching Powell and Pressburger films all day just because we're so much more cultured than you guys are. High school is for losers. It's just like, oh, fuck off.
I hear that. I mean, I was the same way in high school. I was watching all that stuff. And I think that's part of the reason I find it so insulting, because, like, it's this relentless, like, self-deprecation and like self-hatred and self-loathing, and it's like get over yourself.
That was,
man. And like, and we've said, and you already pointed out, like, I don't need to like every character I see, but if you're gonna have him as, you know, carrying the movie, he has to be watchable. It has to not be agonizing. And every moment with this guy was freaking agonizing.
And there's like some joke too. It was early on in the film where the girl brings that little doll and says, like, you know, this is our we have to pretend this is a kid and take care of him. He's like, oh, I might masturbate all over it. Keep it away from me. I was like, there's no point to have this joke here. Right, this is the masturbating so stupid.
In the defense of the movie, that scene was supposed to be agonizing and show that he's blowing his chance to socialize.
Yeah.
And that he's just a bigger asshole, pretty much.
At that point, I was so furious with the movie. I mean, you're 5 minutes into the movie, and it's talking about how it's not, you know, it's different than all these other movies, but yet, like, the very next scene is how routine, I can't even begin to imagine how routine this sequence is of going through the lunchroom, these people are at this table, and here's the geeks over here, and here's the goths over here. How many times have we been through these lunchrooms? You can't come up with a different way to introduce an environment, like going through the same mapping of the lunchroom. I'm like, I can't leave this movie. This is for the podcast. I really want to leave this movie right now.
Especially because they kept saying, like, you know, if this was an actual movie, this would be happening right now, and this would be happening. But we're different, so we're not going to do that. Right. Like,
you're different. You're not an actual movie because you're not engaging in any way. You're not entertaining to behold. You're not pretty.
But,
like,
what did I bring? Oh, one of the points I brought up was, you know, by the end of the film, we're supposed to feel a bit sorry for him because, you know, he realizes that he should have spent more time with Rachel and trying to figure out who she was. But at the same time, it's like that whole hour and a half didn't really justify that, because it's like, so what, we're supposed to feel sorry that he has bad social skills instead of just...
Yeah, I didn't feel sorry for him at all. I felt
being
sorry
an actual
for...
nice person.
Sorry, I didn't mean to step in
there. No, that's fine.
I didn't feel sorry for him in the least. I felt sorry for her, and I felt sorry for Earl, because Earl clearly liked her more and saw something in her more than what is it? Me? What is his name?
Greg.
I need to bring something up now, since that's on topic. About, it was like 3/4 of the way through the film, I completely forgot what the character's name was. I'm like, I remember Rachel, I remember Earl, I don't know what the protagonist's name was. And I was so hoping that they would not bring his name up again, because I'm like, if I go through this movie and don't even remember the protagonist's name, that's going to be a good sign that I hate this film. But they did bring it up again, so then I remembered it. I was bummed at my weird memory.
Earl is a whole other story. I mean, overall, I feel like 90%, if not all, of the characters in this movie are over the top and caricatures.
Oh, they're absolutely. All, yeah, they're all flat,
the,
dynamic,
the adult characters in particular are the worst. But go ahead with your Earl diagnosis.
But I feel like Earl is just another stock character that they needed to contribute a minority character.
I was worried about that. I was like, even watching the trailer, I'm like, is he just going to be like the token black friend? Which I don't think he is, because he has a little more depth than just being like, just being there to fulfill a minority.
Would argue with that, because look at his lifestyle, his life story. Is that very creative? Is that anything original?
That's the typical like minority life story. You know, he's from the poor side of the tracks. Like, his brother is like this gangster type who sits on his corner with no friends. Like, there's no other people around at all. It's just like Earl and his brother yelling at Greg. Like, that's the extent of their existence. And then, well, and then, you know, he's brought in to break up the fight, you know, because he's the badass black dude. He's got to be the one who breaks up the fight. Like, again, a movie that's like proclaims itself to be so original, and it's just stereotype and cliche after one after another.
He's also got to deliver one, because there are several, one of the climactic monologues that is supposed to
turn the
movie around.
More interesting and more true to the narration if it was Greg who lived on the shitty side of town, and Earl was like, had maybe a little more of a relaxed middle class existence?
I would feel like more interested in
like
that.
Wouldn't it be more, make more sense for Greg than not to fit in? He's like, you know, and I don't know. There's so many things this movie could be that it's not, it wants to be that it's not. It drives me insane.
I went on a short Twitter rant couple days ago. I know this sounds really cheesy, but one of my tweets I said was, I'm getting really tired of seeing stories about whiny, privileged, white teenage boys taking over the Bill Duggs Roman archetype. Because I love that, like, I love coming-of-age stories, and I love, I don't care if they're, like, white or not, white, black, or anything, but it's like, when it's just these characters who are just, like, so privileged to begin with, and it's like, you've got a good life, you're, you know, not doing too bad. Why are you just making a big deal out of nothing?
He
it's just
is
like
so
I can't.
Whiny throughout this movie,
which is why it reminded me a lot of Kings of Summer, because that was a very similar concept where it's like this kid just feels like because his parents aren't letting him do like one or two things that he wants to do, he's gonna be so cool and move out to the wilderness and start living on his own, but still expect everything just to go his way. And I was just like, I don't like these characters. These characters are terrible.
Okay, let me pose this for you before we go any further. There any, off the top of your heads, can you think of any aspects that you did appreciate about these movies?
I did like the scene. Like, it wasn't even like what was happening in the scene. It was just how it was shot. Was when they were stoned, and they're like, we see them from the back, and they're almost like floating down the hallway. I liked how they were doing that, and then they just like cut to their eyes, like looking back and forth, just kind of paranoid. That was kind of funny. The ending scene almost made me cry, but I was almost really, really upset at the same time. So I was more upset at the movie for making me cry.
Did I talk about that recently?
You did. So I was almost there, and I was just, ugh. But, like, I don't know. Maybe it was just the Brian Eno music that made it nice. But, yeah. I mean, it's... I don't know. I mean, there were a couple parts that did make me... Oh, the part that made me actually laugh genuinely was when Earl and Greg are shooting one of their parody films, and one of their friends comes running onto the set to say, hey, you should make a movie for Rachel. But she's running on the set, and she's just yelling random things like, oh, cut, action, lights. And it's, I just found that funny, maybe because I have, like, friends or family members who aren't really film related who would probably just like say random stuff like that thinking they know what they're doing. But
well, and she's not I think at that moment she's not taking them seriously, which is like how I wanted to feel at that moment. So I laughed at that moment too, because I was like, yeah, they're doofuses and you should be totally making fun of them, even though she's also like an idiot and doesn't really know what she's saying. But I appreciated like any moment where they were made fun of.
I was still reeling from the idea that this girl who was supposed to be in one of the popular groups is even acknowledging these kids.
Because of Rachel, right? That was... That was the connection, right?
That was the connection, but...
Yeah. I don't know. You know, the movie didn't give her anything to do. I didn't even think there was no character arc to
speak of. I was just too angry at that point.
Of, you know, so by the end when she's like... Her and Greg are, you know, coupling at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't... There's no weight to it. Like, and that would have been like a more... like. Considering that Greg was forced to go over to Rachel's and like he was never like anything he wanted to do, he always wanted this other girl, like mm-hmm. why not explore that? Like, why not like have that relationship actually mean something to the story or to the
I was really upset when it turned out they were apparently going to be going to the prom, and so when that twist kind of unfolded, I felt better about it. It was still kind of awkward though. I had questions. I had lots of questions from this movie.
Yeah, where's the exit? That's my question. No, seriously, I was out there.
But you stuck around.
I saw every stinking minute of this film. And yeah. To my.
You've earned yourself a badge.
Yeah. Yeah. Something.
Kind of makes sense that he's making a bad movie if he was a personal assistant to Alejandro González Iñárritu. But, you know.
Oh, the director?
Yes. Yeah.
Was he?
Let's talk about the director. He has made one other feature film. It is the 2014 remake of The Town That Dreaded Sundown.
I don't even know what that is.
It's I want to see the original, which I've never seen.
Yeah, I'd really like to watch the original.
Wikipedia describes it as a horror film meta sequel, which brings me back to this film at topic. Getting really tired of like Hollywood trying to throw meta-ness into films. It's just not like
this is the prime example of how it will not work.
I mean, it didn't go like over the top with it like other films had. Like, I'm just gonna bring up Birdman because that's my go-to hate. But it's like I don't know. It's just I feel like the trend is over. It was like cool when Scream did it and stuff like that back in the 90s, but now it's just. Almost all movies try to be that way, or at least have a little bit of it. And it's just like, I don't need to always be reminded that I'm watching a movie every single time I'm watching a movie. Right. If you're doing it from time to time, that's cute and it's interesting, but just don't constantly tell me like this self-awareness that you have with the narrative when it's not even that good.
Yeah, all the adults, like they all came on screen. I was like, oh, look, they're a good actor. And then they spoke. And it was ridiculous lines to further a stupid plot that was just a formulaic bunch of garbage. So it was just a waste of everyone, really.
This is the scene where we do this thing that doesn't even matter.
Like the whole premise of the thing with like Connie Britton forcing her son to go
hang out with this dying girl
who's like mild acquaintance, and then that the scene on the stairs where like he first comes over and there's like, oh, my mom's making me do this. You could solve this movie and end it in 15 minutes. She calls up the mother and says, really, I don't know your son. I don't have any interest in hanging out with him. Thanks for the thought. Good night. Phone down.
Which is how that phone...
Which is like how, like, is what people would actually do. Like,
well, it's like how that phone call actually went because he called her and asked, do you want to hang out? And she's like, no, not really.
Right. It's like, now just tell the mother the same thing.
Yeah, this is a very inconsiderate mother, to be honest.
She's awful. She's horrible. She's sending
her kid over there, a kid who may very well, in fact, offend this girl and make her life miserable.
They're all horrible. Like Nick Offerman, like mispronouncing all these like words and movie titles, and like again, just insulting like movie-going communities. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's Molly Shannon as a drunk cougar. Like, oh my God! I couldn't imagine that.
The teacher in the high school is this eccentric, right. Tattooed
who gets accused of being a drug addict. But of course that can't be true because he looks too much like a drug addict. So if he gets accused of being a drug addict in the movie, you know it's not going to amount to anything.
It annoyed me how easily they wrote that off because it's like, okay, I mean, I guess movies don't have to like portray reality, but it's like there's no way some teacher would ever just be getting off that easily just because some student says, oh, yeah, we didn't actually get high off that. We got high off those cookies. But it's like...
And they're bringing this all up in class, like in front of everybody. normal
that
procedure.
That would not happen. The teacher would probably get, like, suspended, and then there'd be an investigation. Be
therapy class.
Just go test his soup.
Now,
you
see,
know?
That might have made it a little more interesting, because then, like, he has to go, like, talk to the teacher for life advice outside of school hours.
I think anything would have made this a little more interesting.
Made it more interesting if Greg and Earl took the dying girl to the Amazon and really made of her an Herzog movie and, like, trudged around the Amazon for an hour and a half. I'd watch that. Watch her dying on a stretcher as they carry a boat up a mountain.
You can make a parody of this movie where you very well
I'm sorry. I really hated this movie.
Thinking on it now, it's I don't know if it's to the film's credit or if it's just something that I'm trying to stick a Band-Aid on this movie and make it heal a little faster. But you could almost argue that the adults in this movie are their own cliques and their own little subgroups.
Yeah, but they're just so stereotypical and not...
Do they even interact with each other? Is there anything that... I mean, could there be any... They're just these isolated stereotypes wandering around.
Oh, my God. I don't think any of the adults
they don't
interact with each other.
except his mom and dad, but that's so brief, it doesn't even...
Oh, do they actually have a...
Well, because when they first come to talk to him...
Oh, right,
and
that's
then
right.
I think they're talking later when they're saying, you know, our son done fucked up. He ain't getting into college anymore. What we gonna do?
Huh, that's interesting.
That was verbatim, everyone? I just... So you know...
That's funny that none of the adults, you never really see them interact with each other.
I didn't think there were enough character. There wasn't enough character there for it to even really matter. I mean, they were so clearly caricatures that, you know, they come in for their little humorous, quote-unquote humorous scene. They get their line and their paycheck, and then they leave. And it's totally inconsequential to the film on any level. Like, there's no adult in this movie that needs to be there, except for Connie Britton, so she can force Greg to go see her in the first place. Other than that, there's no adult interaction that has to take place. They're there because the screenwriter feels it's necessary. It's just
they needed more
so,
zany characters.
Oh, yeah, that's what it needed, more zany characters. No, they needed, like, more level-headed, like, something more grounded in reality. I don't like to use that word because I don't think, you know, realism is necessarily something to strive for in film or even really attainable. But certainly there's a verisimilitude that you can strive for in these kind of, like, personal relationships if you're trying to have a movie that is somehow a mirror of real life.
Yeah, and something that I've noticed in a lot of reviews that I've been reading was, you know, this film has this kind of message of trying to... It seems like it's trying to teach us to be more, like, self-aware of other people's issues and try to think outside of just yourself, try to practice, like, the correct kind of humility, not the humility that he uses where he pretty much just self-deprecates then.
Yeah, that's
but, you know, actually putting yourself in someone else's shoes and trying to understand their struggles. But it's kind of funny because the film as a whole just focuses on Greg and his own feeling. He never really learns to feel for anybody by the end of the film. And if he does, it's still, as the film, it's just working as a service towards him. It's not working as, like, a service towards him to help Rachel. It's just working as a betterment for his own self, even though the betterment for his own self is to learn to think of others, which is kind of weird. It doesn't seem to, quite match up.
Right. Except for he never does. He never really learns to think of others. I mean, and that goes, back to the narration. Like, it's so about him that he can't even tell the truth about this story, you know, because, how will it look? How will it reflect on me?
So it's very.
I want it to be different. I want it to change, and so I'm going to think that way until I have to tell the truth.
So yeah, it is very strange that a film that tries to teach selflessness ends up being super selfish just by bettering that one character's supposed development. Ugh.
I didn't see any growth in him at all. And none of the other characters were given enough to. Show growth.
I felt like we got a sliver of it by the end, but I felt so cheated by then because it always, whenever movies do that and throw it in last minute, it feels like such a cheat. It's
right.
Just like, this feels undeserved. I don't want it.
Just a technique used to elicit a response. regardless of you, if you actually earned it. You know, again, if they'd done more with Earl's story, like there, that could have been like a really good story of Earl, you know, not being able to approach Rachel and having these feelings for her, because it's like two or three different scenes where you kind of get the idea that, oh, he's got a real thing for her. He like sees her, whereas Greg doesn't see her at all. He just like sees this kind of.
So you're saying that if they had included more of a romance,
not necessarily a romance, but like more of a friendship, or just like more of a relationship of any kind, more interaction of any kind. Like Earl was always just like kind of like side character, even to the scenes that he's in. Like he never really felt like a real necessary component of the story. Again, it's like it's just about Greg. The title of this movie should be Me, Me, and Me.
All right. Well, we already established that this film director has only made one other feature. He's dabbled in a lot of TV shows, including Glee, The Carrie Diaries, and American Horror Story.
He's worked as a personal assistant for, what's his Wikipedia say? Martin Scorsese, Alexandro Gonzalez Iñárritu, Nora Ephron, and Robert De Niro, before transitioning into a second unit director for feature films.
Is there anything else that we want to discuss? I feel like from here on out, it's going to be beating a dead horse.
I can't express enough. Just don't go see this movie. Just
there was
save your money for something else. Go to a different movie.
Yes, do that. There were some camera movements early on in the film that really annoyed me too, which was disappointing because apparently the cinematographer has worked on, I think, some like Park Chan-wook films. I think he did Stoker. I love the camera work in that film. I just love that film in general.
Yeah, go into the camera work for this movie in general.
I mean, I did like some of the cute things it did. Like I said, when they were going down the hallway, I thought that was kind of interesting. Some of it I felt kind of unneeded. Like we were watching the scene earlier with when they're eating popsicles, and they did like some kind of floaty thing, but like looked like they attached the popsicle to the camera. It's like that seemed kind of point. That whole thing seemed kind of pointless because those close shots make me think like there's going to be some sort of introspection on Greg's character, but there wasn't throughout that whole scene. But we keep getting these close-ups of the popsicle, which seem kind of pointless.
I feel like there is a line that you can draw between how effective creative cinematography can be to a film. You can have the best cinematography in the world, but it's not going to make me think any better of a movie.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, sometimes I tolerate it, but like I think one of the first scenes too, when he goes to meet Rachel for the first time, something about like the wide angles in that really seemed off to me. I don't know if they were a little too fisheye or if they were just not composed right, but something seemed really bad. I'm just like, let's get another lens on here or something. This does not look good to me, which, like I said, disappointed me because the guy who was the cinematographer, Chun Hoon Chung, I think he has done a lot of other good things, like Stoker.
I would probably argue the same thing about the editing as well. It's very fluid and quality and stylized, and I think I think both the editing and the cinematography are a bit above the other aspects of this film, to the point where they are being brought down. What?
It's certainly not hard to get above the acting and the writing in this movie. I think sometimes good cinematography can be a crutch, I think. It's so easy nowadays with modern technology to make beautiful pictures.
Usually I think, like, if I'm watching a film and I either don't think about the cinematography or I do notice it and like it, then it's positive. But if I notice it and I'm like, this does not look good, then something's wrong.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know. The editing was all right. Like, the animation things were kind of cute every now and then, but, like, when he started out really early on, it's just, like, I couldn't really get into it. Okay. I think there was one quick edit to one of the animations, which I thought kind of worked, because then it cut back to the story right away.
Mm-hmm. But, again, it's just pointless.
Yeah, overall, this movie just reminded me of too many other movies that I disliked.
Same here.
And it was trying so hard to remind you of movies that it liked. That you like. I was really trying.
Tagline for the film.
Another fail.
They're trying to make you think of better movies.
Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl. This is the part where we say, we tried.
This movie will remind you of what movies you can watch after you get out of the theater to wipe the taste of this out of your mouth.
Speaking of wiping the taste of this out of your mouth, last time we talked about the film Inside Out and the aspect of characters within the heads, within the minds of other characters, or the same character, we decided to contemplate that topic, that theme, and maybe mention one or two movies that share that trait in common. Right off the top of my head, I thought of a couple movies, but the main one was probably Michel Gondry's Science of Sleep. The Science of Sleep has Gael Garcia Bernal basically playing a guy who he has trouble telling reality from dreams, which I think is more than appropriate for a Gondry film. And so there are a lot of different segments which really dive into that surreality. One of them being this scene that I've chosen about him basically operating his own body from inside his own brain. Like, he is literally a person living inside his head, turning the gears and pulling the levers of his own body.
I have seen Science of Sleep, but only once, and I wasn't fond of it, and don't actually recall that scene. So I can't comment on your choice, Matt, really, other than I wish Michel Gondry would be better than he ends up being half the time.
I've only seen two films by him. I've seen Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which I really love.
It's a great movie.
And then Be Kind Rewind, which it's been years since I've seen it, but I thought it was cute.
Yeah, it's all right. My choice for this topic was 1987's Joe Dante comedy Innerspace, starring handsome and young Dennis Quaid, Martin Short, Meg Ryan, like the pinnacle of Joe Dante's career, really, like probably working with the most budget he ever worked with, and just incredible cast besides Quaid and Short and Meg Ryan. There's Kevin McCarthy, the late Vernon Wells, Robert Picardo, Henry Gibson, just great character actors all around. So Martin Short's a store clerk. Dennis Quaid is like a astronaut scientist type, more like an astronaut test pilot who is in a special program involving miniaturization. He's accidentally injected into Martin Short. People want him out. Hijinks ensue. Not straight slapstick, not straight spoof, but definitely has elements of those. But just really funny special effects by ILM. And as far as the topic we're on, Dennis Quaid is in the ship inside of Martin Short, and he, like, you know, he parks in the ear canal and is able to communicate with him and help him out and stuff. It's a great movie. It's really funny.
I just went with Being John Malkovich, the 1999 Spike Jonze film. Spike Jones.
Spike Jonze?
Is it Jones? Jones? I don't know.
Jones.
Jones. That's just about the character John Cusack. He starts at this new office space that's a little weird, a little off kilter. He finds this little portal in there, or not really a portal. Well, it is a portal. It's like a little closet that he ends up going into, and he finds out by going into it, he gets transported into the head of John Malkovich, and he can watch John Malkovich's life unfold. And then the whole thing about the whole symbolism with puppetry in there, he finds out that after a while he can start controlling John Malkovich if he works hard enough, him being a expert puppeteer. So that's just kind of interesting, not just to see the limited scope of things that we do through John Malkovich's supposed vision, but then also how he's acting when other people are in control of him, and then what happens when he looks inside his own head.
I've always had a deep love for that movie,
Malkovich.
As you mentioned, the symbolism, the theme of puppetry and being somebody else, it's always like there's a lot that you can feel towards that idea. I feel like everyone can probably relate to that in one way or another. And I've always been curious how they chose John Malkovich to be. How did they choose him? And who was the second choice? Who would they have gone to?
Right. I'm Wikipediaing this right now. Let's look.
Being Martin Short.
Being Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Being Michael Caine.
Being Kevin Spacey.
This isn't his first ideas, I think Kaufman's first ideas. Malkovich was nowhere to be seen. Wrote a spec script in 1994, and though it was widely read by production company and film studio executives, I'll turn it down. Oh, well, there was this comment. Whereas some studios, including New Line Cinema, dropped the project after Chairman Robert Shea asked, why the fuck can't it be being Tom Cruise?
Where are you getting that from?
This is on Wikipedia. It's I think this is just talking about when they were shopping the film around to different studios. The chairman of New Line at the time said that.
New Line.
It's not exactly saying why he went with Malkovich, because I think at this time, too, Charlie Kaufman really wasn't, like, a known name.
No.
So it's not like he could just say, like, yo, John, let's make a movie about this. I mean, unless he knew him.
Which is possible.
In the past, but I don't know. Maybe they just wanted to go with a somewhat prestigious actor, but someone who could go with the weirdness of the project, too.
Yeah, he's a theater actor, too. Maybe that had something to do with it.
Well, because, and his character in the film is pretty much playing himself, just theatrical performances.
Right.
All right, well, this is the Phi Effect, and what did you say last time? It should be signing out, signing off?
Signing off.
Sign off.
That's what they say on the radio.
Yeah. Is that what they say on the radio?
Yes,
they do. But they now that we're living in the digital age, maybe it should be signing out, because that's what you do on websites.
Oh.
Or we could just say later. Later, suckers.
Until next time.
Until next time, later, suckers.
That's it. Antagonize the audience.